Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Welcome back to Future Proof on News Talk. I'm Jonathan McRae. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, you can email us, science@newstalk.com. Now, if you're really lucky, every once in a while, when you look down a telescope, you'll see something you don't expect to see. New researchers looking at data from the JWST telescope have been surprised by what they didn't see, which is a lot of supermassive black holes. Now, just to be clear, there were a lot of supermassive black holes, but they didn't see them because they're black holes. There are two groups who will appreciate that joke, dorks and astronomers. And to prove that that is not an overlapping Venn diagram, we have Dr. John Regan, who's from the Maynooth University, who's an astronomer and non-dork. I, of course, play the role of dork non-astronomer. John, you're very welcome.
I'm not sure I'm a non-dork, but let's go on.
Bit of an overlap then, bit of overlap Venn diagram.
Yeah.
I am tired and it workshopped that intro for quite some time. I hope it worked. But let's get into it. This research is looking at primordial black holes. What exactly are primordial black holes?
Yeah, so primordial black holes, as it stands, are a theoretical idea. So if they exist, they were formed in the first few seconds after the Big Bang. Like I said, they're purely theoretical, but they've kind of come in and out of vogue a lot over the last, well, I don't know, maybe four decades. And they come in and out of vogue because if they exist, they would solve a lot of problems for us in astrophysics or cosmology. For one thing, they'd solve, or potentially at least alleviate some problems with something that's called dark matter. So dark matter is kind of like the glue that binds the universe together. Without dark matter, we don't really understand how galaxies could look the way they do. They just wouldn't. So actually about 100 years ago, a guy called Fritz Zwicky was making observations of galaxy clusters. So these are these big, bright objects in the universe. And they were zooming around each other. So if you imagine, like, you know, you're spinning around a pizza or something like that, or the guys who are making pizzas are spinning them around. And what he found is the galaxy clusters would spin apart unless there was some other gravitational potential basically gluing them together. And he coined the term dark matter. And the trouble with dark matter is, though, other than its observational effects, its kind of impacts, we can't actually detect the stuff.
I don't think it's real. I don't think dark matter and dark energy are real. I know I keep saying it, John. One day you're going to ring me up. I'm going to be 80 years old. You're going to say, Jonathan, you were right. Dark energy and dark matter, they're just not real. And that's going, I tell you, the smile on my face, I'm going to ring up all the astronomers.
I think there's two problems there. One, you may not make it to 80. And if you do, you probably won't be smiling. I think there's a... But anyways, primordial black holes could be a component of dark matter. Now, it's tricky because it can't be all of dark matter because, for one thing, primordial black holes, if they're too small, will evaporate due to Hawking radiation, so they'll die off. And if they're too large, they would show up in different surveys, so we'd see them.
When you say primordial black holes, you don't mean just young black holes, do you?
No.
So what is a primordial black hole?
So a primordial black hole would form, if it does form, like you said, in the first few seconds after the Big Bang. So some sort of a phase transition or something we don't really understand. So the Big Bang, obviously, we don't understand anyways. So it's not too big a jump to think, well, something we don't understand may produce something else we don't understand.
For sure.
That's a really unclear time in the universe's history. You know, it's what we describe as T equal to zero, but like, what exactly happens then, we don't know. So primordial black holes could form in the very early universe and could be some contribution to dark matter. So that's one thing. That's one reason why they're in vogue, or coming and out of vogue.
The
second reason is, like you started the podcast here, is that astronomers are now looking at data from the James Webb Space Telescope, which has been, which was launched about 4 or 5 years ago and has kind of electrified the field because it is our most advanced telescope in space. And it allows us to glimpse. And I kind of use the word glimpse because, you know, we don't get clear pictures, but we get glimpses of the very early universe, you know, like because the light we're detecting is coming from the guts of 14 billion years ago. What we actually see are really pixelated images. And I mean, super pixelated. But we do see a lot of black holes, like a lot of them. And we see really weird galaxies. And we're trying to understand how could such black holes exist so early in the universe? And primordial black holes gives us a possible solution there, because if they exist, they exist early in the universe. So they fit that puzzle, if you like.
Isn't it all very, no pun intended, dark though, our understanding of that time? I mean, do we, making up primordial black holes to solve an interim problem between, we haven't a clue what is really happening, which is the Big Bang, and 1 second later, or fractions of a second later, is that actually helping us to understand anything? Explain to me why the primordial black holes are back of interest right now. Like, what problem are they solving, apart from the dark matter?
Like, in terms of just flat out black holes, they would solve why we see so many of them and so why they're so massive so early in the universe.
But why does the existence of primordial black holes mean that we would see supermassive black holes early in the universe?
So if we want to have no primordial black holes, which is totally valid, then we need another pathway to get us very massive black holes very early in the universe. And that could happen through, let's say, star formation. And star formation happens, and then you get a black hole forming. And then the black hole has to grow very, very quickly. So the problem with that is the growing very quickly part. So it's not obvious how that can happen. So primordial black holes kind of give us an out by giving us very massive black holes straight off the bat. So that's the good thing about them. Now,
right.
I think you're right to be skeptical, and I'm skeptical myself. I think what we need to see for me to believe primordial black holes, and I would argue for anybody who's listening, if they want to believe primordial black holes, they should watch out for two things. I think primordial black holes, if they exist, will be hiding in the extremes. If we were ever to detect a gravitational wave event, so this is a merging of two black holes, if one of those black holes had a mass less than the mass of the sun, then there's no other way for that black hole to form except for it to be primordial. So because astrophysics gives us no pathway to form a black hole that's smaller than the sun. And that's nothing to do with the sun. It's just the sun is a very typical mass and it shouldn't form a black hole. But if we ever saw a black hole that was smaller than the mass of the sun, so smaller than one solar mass, has to be a primordial black hole. Mm.
Because we just don't have the rules of physics to create something like that. So what you're saying is that would be a red flag that okay, our understanding of how black holes are formed needs a wiggle.
Exactly. So if you like it, basically we need something weird. It's kind of like science is like that. If you want, you need something that's like ironclad, like this iron fist. And if we got, like, let's say we find a primordial black hole that's half the mass of the sun, then that's it. All bets are off. You're done. You have your Nobel Prize won. You have found something that's absolutely definitive. That has to be a primordial black hole. That's one. So that's one extreme. Now, we haven't seen that yet, but we've only been observing gravitational waves for whatever it is now, 8 years, 9 years. So it's early days, relatively speaking. The other one, so that's the one extreme. Then the other extreme is if we were to see a very, very massive black hole very early in the universe, then that would start to really break astrophysics again at the other side, because as I explained earlier, we can form astrophysical black holes by first you form a star, then the star collapses into a black hole, and then the black hole grows to be very massive. Now, because I said then twice there, a few things have to happen. So it has to grow, and this takes time.
Mm. But just to be clear, we do know black holes form at least that way. The ones that we know, that's then we're absolutely sure. There's no guesswork there. We know absolutely a star can consume itself and turn into a black hole.
Absolutely. And that we are okay. Absolutely ironclad on. There's no doubt about that. But we know that it takes time for the black hole to grow in the same way as it takes a child time to grow into an adult. This is a well-defined time and it has to be given that time. If with JWST, we were to see a very massive black hole very early in the universe, which therefore means we didn't have time to get very massive, then therefore we can conclude it started very massive. And the only way for it to start very massive if it's primordial. That's the only possible way, because astrophysics, just the astrophysics of star formation and so on, takes time to get going.
So just for those who don't listen to the program regularly, will you explain a bit about this James Webb Space Telescope? Because it appears to be causing all sorts of problems for astronomers.
Yeah, that's probably true. I would say it's causing all sorts of excitement for astronomers. But yeah, absolutely. Problems is maybe a nice way to put it too. So it was launched, I think it was on Christmas Day 2021. So what's that? 4 years ago almost. And it's not in orbit or anything around the Earth, but it's in what's called a Lagrange point between the Earth and the Sun. And that's a very stable point, which means it can point very accurately and it doesn't actually use much fuel either. So it's an ideal scenario. Downside is if it breaks, you can never go and fix it. It's simply too far away. But it's also an infrared telescope. So it basically detects red light, if you like. And that's very important because the galaxies we want to look at are an incredibly far, a long way away, 13 billion light years away. And light takes time to travel to us. So we actually, through this mechanism, we see the galaxy, the universe, as it was 13 billion years ago. But also what happens is as light is traveling to us from that great distance, it gets stretched and becomes red. And that's why the James Webb Space Telescope is an infrared telescope. It's designed to detect the light from those very first galaxies.
And these images that we've started to see over the past year or so have started to sort of pick away slowly but surely at the tapestry that we had sort of woven for ourselves about how our universe works. How significant is it that we're seeing these supermassive black holes so early on in the formation of our universe when we just didn't expect to see that? How big a deal is that?
I suppose it's very, very exciting. It's telling us something fundamental about early galaxies. So it looks like early galaxies were a lot more turbulent, a lot more dynamic, a lot more violent, maybe, than we had expected. The galaxies we see today, or the universe, if you like, that we see today is far more mature. It's a little bit dull, if you like. Things have settled down. It's maturity levels have gone up. It does a lot less partying. It does a lot less, you know, late nights. While
it's still cool, though.
Relatively speaking, yeah, it's kind of like as cool as 40-year-olds get, Jonathan. Less cool, let's say. But the early universe is very turbulent, it's very dynamic. It is kind of like your teenager or maybe even your toddler. It's throwing its toys out of the pram, left, right, and center. And it's very difficult for us to actually model that because our models of the universe are based on what we were used to seeing for the last 20 years, which is this more mature, this more settled down universe. And we've taken those models and we've tried to apply them to
the chaos of the beginning. And it just doesn't work as well.
It doesn't work as well. And it's forcing us to kind of change the way we think and change our models, change just even at a simple level, change our software and change our thinking.
It sort of is analogous in a way, I suppose, to, you know, Newtonian physics. And then all of a sudden you start looking at what happens in subatomic physics and all the rules of how things interact with each other sort of thrown out the window.
There is an element to that, absolutely. And we have to adjust our thinking and our mindset to really adapt to that. And we're still probably in the early stages of that. And what we're seeing, or what I see in the community, is a lot of theories are coming and going very quickly. Throw one theory out and that kind of like people are like, yeah, maybe. And then that's gone 3 weeks later and you have a new theory coming in. So we're in this very much this, and that's the way kind of science works. You know, we kind of throw things out there and we see what works. And that's definitely the fastest way of doing things. It does mean that you have to be quite careful about what you believe and what you have to have a very critical mind and be like, okay, this might not be the right idea, but maybe that's bringing me along the path to the right idea.
And I suppose it must be an exciting time because you've access to these new tools. And it seems to me from just reading the newspapers that we are finding more significant things than we used to, maybe 10 years ago when I was doing the program. It seems like more headlines are being gotten by astronomical finds than there were a decade ago. Who knows? I may not need to wait until 80 to be proved right about dark matter and dark energy. Dr. John Regan from Maynooth University, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Jonathan.
And that's it from us on this week's episode. Thanks to Marisa Sullivan, Rory Galva, Hugo da Silva on sound. Thank you for listening. In the meantime, stay curious.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.